Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 110 for May 28th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And you're probably sick of hearing from me. I'm Buddy Brannon.
Boy, you know, Buddy, it seems like you and I met earlier in the week. I was kind of helping on the sidelines with Triple Click Home, which should be out fairly soon. Maybe out as of when the time people actually hear this podcast. So you and I've got to do a lot of podcasting together this week.
Yeah, and then there was the smoking, is it, Smoking with Serotalk?
Smoking with Serotalk, yeah, smoking
or
with
Serotalk. Or Serotalk, yeah.
The great Serotalk smoke out.
That's right. But we weren't in the lovely California town of sunny San Rafael.
Right. Yeah, you're all over the network this month.
Absolutely. I don't think my mouth's watered that much listening to that discussion of the Bradley smoker in a long time, especially coming up on Memorial Day here as we record this. So,
and if anybody would like to send me one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing the mics aren't omnidirectional, because you'd hear this rumbling in the background with everyone's stomachs going grrr.
Totally. We actually have some news to talk about this week. Imagine that for the Serotalk Podcast.
I knew we were here for a reason.
Yeah, that's it. Wow.
I was hoping for, cookies and punch, but news is good.
We'll work on that for next week, maybe.
There we go.
Refreshments with the podcast. Virtual refreshments for all our listeners as well.
Right.
Not sure how we'll pull that off, but we'll work on that.
Yeah, they're still working on that, the transporter and the food replicator. That's still in development.
Yep. Well, the big story for me this week is I'm so glad I have never been a juror in patent lawsuits.
No kidding.
They'd have to kick me off. Like I said on Triple Click, when I see patent stories, my eyes glaze over and I just kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, this had to be a challenge for the jurors in the Google and Oracle patent wars. And as I was reading this article, and it's not even that long, I was already, my head was already gearing up to explode, and this trial has been going on for quite some time, so people have been breathing this stuff for a long, long time, and it turns out that no, Google with Android has not infringed on Oracle patents. That was the ruling that was given this week.
Yeah, I think they said that copyright is another matter, but by that time I was kind of not coherent anymore.
Yes. If you're interested in reading about this, since we've pumped it up so much and talked about how exciting it is, you can check it out.
If you need a sleep aid.
Yes.
Or if you are a patent expert and you want to leave us an iReport, there is actually a time limit on those, by the way, so you're going to need to condense
be your concise.
This would definitely be the Reader's Digest registered trademark version.
Absolutely. Well, in other news, if you work for IBM, you can bring your smartphone to work, but don't plan on using Siri. This one just seems silly to me.
The first thing that I thought of with this article was the story that went around, and I don't know how much truth there is to it, but the story that went around when the Furby was popular,
right,
that like the CIA or the Pentagon or whatever banned Furbies because they thought that the Furby would like record their conversations and then spew them out at random later on outside of the secret walls of the Pentagon and or CIA. Yeah, can you imagine? Ooh, la, 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 nay, nay, big nuclear bomb.
Ah, those dissidents.
Yes. So
fun.
The big sin of Apple is to take everything we say and upload it to the web for processing, so Siri can can get smarter. So my contribution has been text my wife that I want 2 snack wraps from McDonald's.
Super secret information. Absolutely. We don't want that getting out.
No. Nope.
Or Siri, what are you wearing?
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Will you marry me? I am not licensed to do that.
We're all speechless. You know,
and how much of that? How much of that stuff really is, after the results are sent back, how much is actually kept attached to any particular individual and so forth? And, you know,
well,
of course, the article says we don't know.
Yeah, nobody really knows. And I think that Siri is often used for stuff like we were just talking about, you know, pick up a Taco Bell Dorito taco for me or whatever. But some of it is or could be a legitimate concern where people dictate their emails. And they might be talking about, you know, super secret company info in those emails. We have no idea if it's kept or not, but that's kind of what has the paranoia pretty rampant at IBM.
Well, this reminds me, too, of the article yesterday that I saw about cloud computing or cloud storage. Oh, geez, I can't stand that. Cloud, cloud storage taking the place of USB thumb drives, and that USB thumb drives are on their way out because services like Google Drive and Dropbox and so forth are so much handier. That has definite privacy concerns attached to it, and I think that that sort of dovetails with this. I think we can have a link to that article in the show notes too, can't we?
Absolutely.
You bet. We can do that. In other news related to spoken dialogue, there is a service called Spoken Layer that I don't know if it's actually out or if it's being developed. Are you guys clear about that one?
I'm not.
I think it is not out just yet. That's the impression that I got. Like it was in beta, and so it's available for, you know, a certain group of users.
It's an iPhone app that it either reads text online with synthetic speech or a human narrator. It's like magazine articles, that sort of thing, as I understand what this is going to be.
That was my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah, this is kind of cool because obviously we're very used to having things read in text to speech, and there are actually plugins, extensions, things like that for Firefox, I know, and for Chrome as well, I think, that will do this with text-to-speech, and it's not just for the blind population. In fact, I don't think it's really geared toward the blind population at all. It's for sitting back and doing something else and listening to your article. But the one thing that none of these things has done is to send these things to a human narrator. Obviously, you'll have to wait a little longer to have the article read, but it does add a bit more nuance than sort of text-to-speech engine. Yeah, I know, pun not intended.
That's awesome.
Than nuance. This article actually underscores something interesting. It's something that's instructive. We shouldn't really forget. And it's been brought up time and time again. And it's something that, like, not just our population forgets, but the population at large kind of forgets. Mm-hmm. And that is that oftentimes what is now mainstream technology was once specialized technology. And in this article, it says that the guy that started WebLayer did it to accommodate for something he would have needed some time ago because he's dyslexic.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, actually. Things really are starting to dovetail more than ever before. I mean, last week, you know, the blind community was pretty excited about the accessibility improvements in Flipboard. But the article I read just kind of said, and if you get tired of reading, you can just let VoiceOver read it for you. It was from a mainstream, you know, source. They weren't really focusing on the needs of the visually impaired. They just kind of, like Ricky said, saw it as kind of a cool little convenience feature. Kind of makes me wonder how many sighted people learn enough VoiceOver gestures to let it read, but I might be surprised, you know?
This is a really exciting development, and this is actually something that our company in particular has really championed since we started 10 years ago, and that is more useful technology in the mainstream. Mike has said it way from the beginning that he looks forward to the day when adaptive technology companies per se aren't needed because everything's accessible. We're not there yet, obviously, but boy, howdy, it sure looks like we're we're getting close. We're getting closer all the time, and I'm excited to see it myself.
Absolutely. Definitely. I think we're really on the right track, and it's getting better every day. It's an interesting time to be alive and enthusiastic about tech stuff.
Well, speaking of tech stuff, I will not make you discuss any iPad rumors or Yay! Any iPhone rumors.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
For one thing, I think we've covered them all like 15 times. So the ones that
I
are
actually... I actually heard they're going to use a gummy lifesaver as a home button.
That's awesome.
And oh, that's I'm pretty great. Sure this that's is fantastic. Actually true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would work. But, you know, the guy that you could really ask, except he would never tell you, is the Senior Vice President of Industrial Design, Mr. Jonathan Ive, or should I say Sir Jonathan?
Sir Jonathan.
Sir Jonathan.
Yes. He was knighted.
They knight everybody just about. Doesn't it seem like everybody's
it's
knighted?
True.
Like
it feels like that, yeah.
Like Paul McCartney, Elton John are knighted, you know, this guy. Yep.
So this guy's been around since 1996, and Steve Jobs even noted the contributions that this man has made to the company. Mr. Ive is excited about current developments at Apple. Now, we don't know if that is what we already know about or if that's something we don't know about. My guess is it's probably both of the above.
I'm thinking that it's something we don't know about.
I think you're probably right.
I just think that because, you know, Apple, it's like Apple doesn't talk about anything. And if we already know about it, it just seems to me like there'd be some hint. But, you know, because Apple's so secretive, to be even more secretive than that and say, well, our most important work is ahead. I'm working on our most important work, but I can't tell you what it is.
Right.
It sounds to me like it's not anything that we're going to be seeing tomorrow.
Yeah.
That may be true. And, you know, Apple is incredibly secret. Like this guy's office is, you know, in a super secret part of the installation. I don't know if it's surrounded by force fields or what, but
underground.
No one
lead
is allowed.
Lead-lined underground bunker.
Yeah. No one can go in this guy's office, which makes sense. You know, who knows what kind of whiteboards he has up detailing stuff that he's working on and so on.
So do you think they have armed guards around? I bet they do. I bet there's
well. You know, that's interesting.
Like literally security guys that are hired to make sure you don't go past this spot. Well, I suppose if you're in the building at all, you have some clearance and then probably certain
Just
areas.
Just send your Furby in there.
There you go.
That's right.
With the Siri equipped iPhone.
Yeah. Right.
We've been talking a lot about Braille and literacy on this podcast. We've done it for several weeks, and from the response we've gotten from our listeners, it's a topic that people really do care about and really do want us to continue to discuss. And in the spirit of that, we have a mainstream article that talks about over-reliance on technology undermining spelling skills.
Boy, I'm glad somebody's getting that message.
Yeah.
Right. It's not Finally. Just blind people who have the problem, although it is a big problem in our community. But again, it's not restricted to us. There are people, I talk to people online all the time, and they misspell things like definitely or friends. You know,
definitely.
They switch the E and the I.
Friends.
Definitely you're frying.
Definitely frying Ed. definitely yes. You're frying Ed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And people need to get thier spelling straight. T-H-I-E-R.
Z-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. Y-O-U-R right.
I was texting someone once and I went to say bye as in goodbye and I wrote B-U-Y instead.
Oops.
And realized what I'd done just after I said it. It was like, oops.
Yeah, that was after a marketing meeting.
Totally.
Right. Goodbye. Yeah.
No, okay, so the thing that really strikes me about this is that, and maybe this is me being bitter and cynical, but this is a mainstream article and it's just such a tragedy that, you know, electronic things are eroding our young people's ability to spell. But yet, that same argument when it was about our blind kids, oh, well, it's good enough.
Mm.
The technology is good enough. And really, we've got a lot of work to do before people understand that our blind kids need to be literate just as much as our sighted kids do. And no, the electronic things are not good enough by themselves. They're important, yes, but they're not enough. They're not good enough. They won't replace literacy. For our blind kids, not for our sighted kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, our next article brings that really home. I mean, I've known intellectually that people with low vision have struggled because schools don't want to teach them Braille. And I get that it's a cost thing. They don't want to spend the money to bring a teacher in, blah, blah, blah. But this article that we link to in our show notes really tells the story of a young man who does have some vision, but because of his eye condition, you know, light really is painful to him at times and really causes him to not be able to see at all at times. And the struggle that these parents, who are really strong advocates for their son, you know, the work they had to go through to get the school to even let this young man have some Braille instruction. It's like, why? You know, it's not like they're requesting a gazillion dollars worth of equipment. What is so hard about allowing Braille instruction to be taught?
And I think part of it is about the cost. You know, the school doesn't want to pay for this or that or the other. But I honestly think part of it, and this was sort of alluded to in the article, part of it is that the majority of officials may consider Braille to be an inferior medium. So, you know, we want this child to be, quote, normal, and that means reading print. It doesn't matter that this is going to stunt his intellectual development and put him unnecessarily behind. He's reading print just like everyone else. And we want to not give him the option of reading Braille because, well, you know, that's for blind people and Braille is not everywhere and blah, blah, blah. So I can't imagine being a parent and having to advocate with the school whose job it should be to give my child the most intellectual advantages possible, you know, trying to convince them to do what is clearly the right thing.
Buddy, I know you've talked about this a little bit before. You have a daughter with some special needs. You want to weigh in on what that's like?
Yeah, it's hard. It's fortunately we've actually been pretty fortunate in that people have listened to what we need and have accommodated. Right. Although we've had a lot better luck with the cyber school for our particular case, that's working better for us. But I mean, we haven't had to advocate for anything on this scale.
Right.
But yeah, absolutely. You know, parents out there, if you don't think that you're getting what your kids need, you know, call them on it. Because if you don't go to bat for your kids, no one else is going to.
That's right.
Exactly. And it's never going to be fixed. You know, you can't say, well, I don't want to make waves and blah, blah, blah. This has life-changing consequences.
You know, a couple weeks ago when I was offline for about 36 hours experiencing an internet upgrade, it was kind of interesting because the technical support guys upgraded my internet before the modem arrived for me to actually take advantage of said upgrade. And so I was offline for a little bit. But I sat down and did something that I had intended to do for several weeks, and that was to write a blog post, which I entitled The Power of Braille. And we have, the last time I checked, I believe about 20 comments on the Serotalk blog, which is almost unheard of, honestly. We get a few comments, maybe, I don't know, three or four in the case, you know, every couple weeks that are based on a couple of different articles or podcasts. We get a lot more iReports, a lot more emails, but for some reason, people really felt compelled to just tune in and comment right on the blog site.
For me, reading this article was a very interesting experience because you were saying everything that I felt, and it was I remember in particular the line where you talk about bringing in a book that had been sitting in the sun for a while and you feel this warmth of the bookcase and you open it up. And then, of course, we've talked about the smell of books on the podcast. Right. And just the whole experience of reading the book. And it's not just about ingesting the content.
And like the crackling sound that you get when you open the binding.
Brand new. Yeah.
Yes.
Love that.
And I think that you put into words what a lot of people are thinking, in that there is something special about the act of reading, and in particular, there's something special about the act of reading on paper,
And, you know, I'm wondering if sighted people are going to experience that nostalgia or already are, maybe, if that is just a blind person thing. I almost don't think it is.
I don't think so.
No, it really isn't. It really isn't. I've heard a lot of people say that about, you know, even though they've got the e-ink on the Amazon Kindle and so forth, that it doesn't have the same feel as reading a paper book, you know, turning the pages and the smell of the book. They even mentioned the smell, so, you know. And the,
my wife tells the story of a little girl we knew at I know at church when she was about two or so. Her mom gave her a book and she couldn't figure out why it wouldn't interact. She couldn't figure out why the pictures weren't moving.
I'm flicking these pages and they're just sitting there.
Yeah.
They're not making any sound. No. And the pictures don't
the
move.
The pictures don't change. Exactly. I don't get that.
Well, speaking of Braille, Code Factory has released mobile accessibility for Android version 1.0.
At long last.
Yeah.
Yay.
With Braille support. You know, we here at Sarotech understand the whole development cycle thing. It is not easy. You know, people are our user base. It's like, we want everything. We want it now. And you really do. It's like, my favorite screen reader feature that I really need, I want it tomorrow. And there are so many things.
So do we.
Absolutely. Exactly.
So
that's totally
we.
Right.
If only we could wave that magic wand.
Oh, man. So good for those guys. Good for those
guys. Yeah, they announced this on that Android show a little while back. So we knew it
was
coming.
I want to say February.
I think you're right. It was somewhere around there. So it might have been before that, actually. But in any case, it's good to see this here. And I'm not sure if there is a list of supported Braille displays. There most likely is, but I have not seen it yet.
Right.
So if you're an Android user, you'll want to check out this press release and learn a bit more about what you can expect. Speaking of supported Braille displays, though, we have an article published by Joe Orozco, who talks to Apple and to other Apple users. And what he's advocating for is Apple recently broke connectivity with some Braille displays, namely the HIMS Braille displays, and there may be others.
Oh, yes, they did.
He is asking users to ask Apple, politely, of course, to bring this back. Apple has such a dedication to accessibility, so I don't think that this is deliberate. You know, we hate HIMS suddenly. I think we'll lock them out for a while.
Right.
I think it was more just an oversight because there isn't necessarily testing with every Braille display with every iOS release. And so this group of displays fell through the cracks. And Joe, again, is just saying, hey, users, let Apple Accessibility know that this is kind of an important thing. Can we get it back, please?
And they have. And I saw that a couple of people have gotten responses back from Apple Accessibility that basically say, thanks for your note. We're aware of this. We're working on it. Unfortunately, we can't give you a date as to when that's going to be fixed.
Right. And I guess their hands are tied because...
Yeah, they can't... I mean, because, well, it's Apple, and they... And more than most, they really can't say anything, even
right.
if they know.
Right. Yes. And they're, of course, beholden to the release of the entire OS update. You don't really get patches, you know.
Right. It's the good and the bad of having accessibility built right in.
Yes.
The good news is that it's built right in, and lots of things are very accessible with very little effort. Bad news is that we have to wait for fixes, just like everybody else.
Waiting.
Indeed.
Who likes it? Nobody. Well, if you're in the market for a Braille display, you have a couple more options to choose from. Freedom Scientific announced this week. New compact Braille displays, their Focus 40 line. I didn't really, other than just smaller, I guess there's what, the 14 cell, is that right?
The 14 cell, and then
these
the 40
cell. These are such
cell.
Odd numbers to me.
They are.
14, why?
14 well, because it's more than 12. 14, and then, of course, the Perkins one, Sika, sold by Perkins, is a 16
the mini,
cell. The Sika
yeah.
Mini, 16 cell. 14, 16, 18. I'm just waiting for someone to come out with like a 19 cell display or
yeah.
something. Like a,
we have one
awesome.
More cell than the competition.
Feeling lucky, get the 13 cell display.
Don't have much to spend? Buy our new 3-cell Braille display.
Well, now you laugh, Jamie, but do you remember the TSI Braille Mate?
I've heard of it.
I don't remember that, but I remember something else that had a single cell.
That's what it was. It was the Braille Mate.
Oh, wow.
Was it? Okay.
A single cell.
Yeah, one cell that scrolled under your finger. And, well, it was an interesting idea, but the problem was, see, it had the one cell, and then it had like a guide cell on either side. So it looked like it had three, and the guide cells, you know, were a full 8-dot cell on either side of the active cell, but they were the exact same height as the active cell. And so, I mean, like when I saw the thing, my first suggestion was, yeah, make the guide cells a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Right.
But they didn't, but yeah, it just had one cell, and you could set the scroll rate of the cell so you could, you know, read with things scrolling under your one finger, which was a bit odd.
Yeah,
clearly it never took off.
Imagine, I don't I don't know. I think my brain would process something differently just scrolling under one finger than it would being able to move my hand across the thing. I feel like it would almost be impossible to get the scroll rate exactly right.
Yeah.
It's too slow.
I think it probably would be.
Fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't have the Goldilocks thing at all.
Right.
You'd kind of have like the mental equivalent of breakup when you're listening to audio.
You're right. I just lost about 1 in 5 letters in that word.
Yeah. The price on these things, I remember $27.95. Which one is that? That would probably be the 40.
40 cell. And then the other one is, I want to say $14.
That's what I was thinking, 95? Actually. Yeah.
It's $14.95 or $12.95. So yeah. There you go.
Getting closer. Still a lot of money, but hey, yeah, we're making progress, maybe. Hopefully, Braille display technology can continue to drop in price.
I want to see what's going to happen with these elastic actuated.
Oh, yes, yes. Whatever you call
polymer,
that stuff, polymer thingies.
Or maybe we could just use gummy bears.
Ooh, nice.
Gummy bears.
Yeah. You know, if we can have one for a home button.
Johnny, stop licking your Braille display.
Yeah, there was an episode a few back called Squishy Dots.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, that would be because they were made out of gummy bears.
Nice.
So, what do you guys think about this here Blind Square app? Give me your thoughts.
I just became the mayor of Saratok on Foursquare.
I agree with the people that say that the name's awful.
Yes.
It's like it doesn't mean anything for one thing, and the fact that it's listed under medical, really?
Yeah.
Why not GPS?
Yeah.
So I guess we should talk about what this actually is before we rant about it.
Yeah, what it actually is it's a wayfinding GPS app, but for its sort of map and points of interest data, it uses Foursquare. I have downloaded it. I have not taken it for a walk yet. I think it'll be interesting to see how it stacks up with something like Ariadne as far as giving sort of a running commentary of what's around me as I'm walking. I'm sort of looking forward to doing that. Some people say it doesn't give any more information than the actual Foursquare app. It will give you your nearest cross street, which I would find pretty handy.
That's
now,
good
if it'll
stuff.
Do that automatically, I'm all for it. It is $11.95, which is kind of expensive, but
it's actually not going to stay at that price point for long. So if you're going to get this thing, get it now. I don't know what it's going to increase to, but you're looking at the low price point right now. So if you care, go and get it.
Right.
I went ahead and got it. And it is self-voicing, so you get the – that's why it's 200 megabytes because
it's got
the acapella Lucy voice. I think it's Lucy. It's the British UK.
Yeah, that's
British
Lucy.
UK. Oh, that's good. It's the,
the British UK,
UK English.
Yeah. Introducing the American UK voice. Everybody's been wanting this.
Yeah, the American UK voice would be
that's the one where it's all trying to talk like a British person, but it doesn't work. It's like an American.
No, it's the British person trying to talk like an American, which is probably worse. Well, actually, it probably is exactly as bad as an American trying to talk like a British person.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, because the only real difference, of course, between an American accent and a British accent if you're a British person speaking American, is that we say
you
our
say
R's.
Your R's, right.
So they really accentuate the R's.
The R's, yes.
R.
R. R.
Enough of that. Let's just move right along here. We couldn't have a podcast that we don't give our audio production guys a chance to play with the word Skype. Yeah, I did say Skype, Patrick.
Beep. Beep.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh. I know how you feel about Skype.
Oh, we like talking about Skype, don't we?
We do. And
I like skipping about Skype.
Apparently GW that Micro kind of awesome. Does too, a little bit, because they released GW Connect version 2.0. With, according to Brian Hartgen, 71 changes. I used the thing, and I didn't know it had that many.
Wow.
I haven't gotten it yet, but one thing that they did that people have really been asking for, thank you, GW Micro, is that if you don't have a Windowize license, you can now purchase an ad-free version. I can already hear the grumbling, however, because it's on a per-month or a per-year basis. It's not a permanent license for ad-free, but it's either $5 a month or $49 a year.
Yeah, and you're right. That has.
I think that's fair, though.
You know,
I think it is too. I feel
I actually
like,
do too.
I feel like people are going to grumble because with everyone, you know, it's human nature, I guess, to say, "Give me everything I want, but don't make me have to pay anything for it." Right. And for GW Micro, it is. You know, you haven't bought our screen reader, which is one of our primary revenue sources, and that's okay. We still want to give you access to GW Connect, but we can't do that for free. We're a company. We have to have sustainable revenue, so let's do it this way.
And you know what? If you don't want to pay $49 or $4.95 a month, use the
Just
thing
listen
and
to the
get
ads
an ad every 30
and
minutes. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, not a big deal. I absolutely think that a monthly or annual charge is fair. I mean, they've got to develop the thing too. So, yeah. You know, if you would like this product to continue to come to you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, how about some indoor navigation? This is an interesting article. I actually kind of like the name of this a little bit. Well, I don't like the headline. Indoor navigation system gives guide dogs a rest. It's like,
yeah, there
really?
Was a line later in the article that made me want to punch things.
Yeah.
The guide dog lists are having a heyday with this one because, of course, you know, it's like clearly somebody has a definite misunderstanding of A, how guide dogs work, and B, our guide dogs don't need a rest. They actually like their work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This program called Navitar, which is a really cool name.
Yeah.
That's an awesome name.
And we'll talk about what it does in a moment, but I want
to. Is it made with unobtainium?
Ooh, nice. We'll talk about what it does in a second, but let's go down this path with the guide dog thing for a bit first. These guys actually got a grant from PETA because it was designed to something ethical use of animals, blah, blah, blah. And to me, this was so angry making because it implies that guide dogs don't enjoy having a purpose. It implies that the bond between a guide dog and its owner is strictly about the guide dog being an
exploited slave
of sorts. Yes, being exploited. And that's just not the case. The bond is such that each creature involved gets something very valuable from the experience.
And I got to tell you, my guide dog and your guide dog, Ricky, our dogs are the happiest and the luckiest animals on the face of the planet because all a dog wants in this life is to please the human.
That's right.
That's what they live for that,
that
stuff.
Is what
and they get to be
them.
With us all the time.
Exactly.
You know, my first puppy raiser said something that I just still chuckle at, and he says, you know, a guide dog has the best job in the world because it gets to go for a walk every day.
Yeah.
And it has the job, it has a purpose, and the dog knows when it has done what it is meant to do. And there's such a just, look at me, I am super awesome, and you know it, because I just did this route correctly kind of thing.
Right.
Yep. Oh, and make no mistake, when it's downtime and it's and work is done, boy, they can kick back with the best of them.
Exactly.
The one thing that most people I know comment on is how different our dogs are in harness versus out of harness.
Yep.
And before anybody says that that they're different in harness because they're servile and being exploited and it's such a horrible, rough life, let me tell you, when you're at work sitting in your chair at work or, you know, the construction tools or whatever it is that you do, do you act the same when you're at work than when you're not at work? I sure hope not.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm going into surgery, and I also like dancing. I think I'll do both at once.
So, I mean, our dogs like us, I hope.
Right.
Know the difference between when it's time to be serious and do a job that is important and when it's time to kick back and relax and have fun. But all that aside, now let's talk about the app.
Oh, yeah, that.
Which kind of has a few problems of its own, honestly, or challenges maybe. Well, first of all, the good thing is it uses some apparently widely available two-dimensional maps. I don't quite understand. How do they map indoor routes?
I don't know. I think you would have to design this yourself. Like somebody, okay, you would use AutoCAD or just create this thing kind of on the fly. Maybe they draw little hallways and turns and stairways and stuff. So I don't think they're available per se initially, but they're easy enough to create.
And it uses the iPhone's accelerometer and compass, which, because they're not totally accurate, I mean, in other words, you can't pinpoint a hallway, you know, within inches or whatever, you actually are going to need to provide information to this app. So with a push of a button or a voice prompt, apparently let it know, okay, I've just reached a hallway or a corridor or something. It's going to be kind of...
I want to know how this thing's going to keep me from falling down a flight of stairs.
You know, it's pretty interesting. Pretty, there's a lot of things
to overcome
here. I told
you it was coming up in 10 feet. I know, by the way, accuracy is 15 feet.
Yeah.
Do the blind man shuffle for a while. That's the deal.
Yeah. So I guess this is one of those things that we will sort of keep an eye on. I don't know. I have a feeling we may not hear a whole lot more about this one. I may be surprised, but we shall see. But in the meantime, let's meet the Plex Talk Linio. I'm not sure if that's how you actually pronounce that word or not. L-I-N-I-O.
I'm not fluent in Esperanto, which is apparently where they got this this term.
Sounds good as anything to me.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is the hardware that the desktop version of the Bookport Plus is based off of. I suspect it is.
Right. It says this thing can still take CDs and USB drives and all that happy stuff.
Flashcards.
Yes.
Or SD cards.
SD cards, right. In addition to being able to go online and search supported databases and either stream content or download it directly from the source.
And in Europe, there's a delivery protocol that... see if I can get this right. DAISY Online Delivery Protocol, DODP, that allows for... Not, I guess I don't quite... Is this just like a download method, maybe, you think? Just a way of distributing?
Yeah, that's...
I guess it streams too, doesn't it?
Oh, okay. So that makes sense.
But I don't know much about it because we don't use it.
Right.
Here.
Right. So if any of you folks in the UK or elsewhere are familiar with what this is and what it does, send us an iReport or an email and let us know.
And it uses Plex Voice, apparently a new voice. I was hoping maybe to find a sample of that, but I didn't.
I don't think that's what it is. It sound, reading
I
the description,
the
it sounds like it's speech compression.
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Which, it's the speech compression. So,
which is good, and I hope they bring that to the portable version as well. It's really hard to get compression done well that sounds good at high speeds or lower speeds.
Yeah
People say that the stream has the best compression out. Who asked you? I haven't heard the compression from the stream, but Bookport Plus and the BookSense have it. Mm-hmm. And people say it's not as good as it is on the stream.
Right.
On the stream it is very good. I give mine a workout frequently.
Yeah.
Does it sound like our disclaimer at the beginning? Comments made on the Sarah Talk podcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect them.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yes, and it sounds good at those higher speeds. It actually does.
I agree. So there's a new version of Baker and Taylor's digital media platform that's going to help libraries serve the visually impaired. It's called Access 360, and it works with Blio.
Yes. Well, Baker and Taylor, you'll recall, was Blio's original partner.
Okay.
Right. But I'm still not even entirely clear on what this is. Apparently, this is a system that various libraries can and do use. Is this a sort of searchable catalog of some sort? Because I don't think this is about the format of the ebook itself, is it?
That my question as well. I mean, do you have to call your library and say, hey, can you...
Are you an Access 360?
Yeah. They're gonna be like, "What's that
entity?"
I don't know.
Well, apparently now Blio must work with more than one screen reader because they mentioned actually JAWS, Window Eyes, and System Access is mentioned in there. So
indeed.
I haven't played with Blio. Actually, I've never played with Blio.
I have. There are a couple of strange navigation things, at least with System Access, that we've reported and so forth. So it's getting better.
Now, what's it like on the iOS app? Have you worked with that one?
I did a review of it about a year ago, and I don't know what things have been fixed since that time. It was a segment on a Sarah Talk podcast, and it just kind of explored navigation and the process of searching for, getting, and reading a book. And once I did that, I just haven't returned to the platform.
Right. Okay. Again, if our listeners have some comments, feel free to email resources@sarahtalk.com, leave us an iReport on iBlink Radio, or call 866-997-2522. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Blio, and maybe you actually have some information about this Access 360 platform.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, for all you audio gamers out there, there's a new iOS app called Blindside, the audio adventure game. And this is one of those sort of audio virtual reality games that will use the accelerometer in the device, and lots and lots of audio information going on. And you're basically on an adventure trying to see if you and your girlfriend can escape from... somewhere.
Yeah.
I unfortunately can't play this one because it's only for iPhone 4S and iPad 2 or later, and I only have a lowly 4.
I don't have it yet either.
No, me either. Now, I know that you turn your body, or actually Elena Roberts tweeted that she was preferring to rotate the phone rather than herself to play this
right.
game. But what I don't know is, I mean, do you actually have to move forward, or, maybe the game itself propels you somewhere? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, maybe you jog in place to simulate walking or something, because otherwise you got to find a big old empty field or something.
It's like, well, I won the game, but I broke my ankle, Oops.
No, I haven't gotten this one yet either, but one person I saw on one of the lists said that it's very like Shades of Doom, except for the iPhone.
Neat.
I actually plan to play with it. I have not yet put any game on my iPhone. I think this will probably be the first one. I will give it a look, so maybe I can report back later.
Awesome.
Coming up after the break, your emails and iReports. We'll talk about a blind musician who's making it in Nashville, and we'll discuss the death of the inventor of the TV remote right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval, and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to the Saratalk podcast. And as usual, we've got this big, giant, heavy bag of audio files that we can dump out here. And
hey, watch where you're dumping that.
Yeah, we hurt Ricky a couple weeks ago with that thing.
Yeah, I think I'm permanently scarred. I'll be showing my audiophile shards at the summer convention. But
I almost dropped that one on my foot. Yeah.
Sorry about that. In the meantime, let's hear from Peg Halverson about our discussion on blind people buying Macs and then maybe having a little remorse.
Hi, Sarah Talks. This is Peg Halverson calling from Sutter, California. And I just wanted to thank you for your awesome podcast. I'd like to welcome you to visit Sacramento, California, where you can breathe very breathable, record-smelling air at Pete's Records. I also wanted to comment on the fact that, yes, we are experiencing people acquiring iPads and iPods and iPhones because they hear that they are good for the blind or easily usable for blind people. And then we are finding that they don't have the slightest idea how to use them. So they're very disappointed in the iOS devices. We're not having so much that experience with the Mac. We seem to find people who know a little bit about computers and the Mac. And so just the iOS devices, I think, like the iPad and iPod. Anyway, thank you so much for the good work. Jamie, I'm so happy. I know you've been there a while, but it's so nice to have you be with Sarah Tech. Thank you so much. And Rick T, you're awesome as usual. Joe, what can I say? Ciao.
So it's not just about the Mac. This still does happen with iOS devices as well. And I don't care what device it is. This just underscores the need for researching your devices before you purchase and not jumping off a cliff just because everyone around you has done so.
Really, this isn't exclusive to Apple or even to computers.
That's true. Right. I remember when I got my very first computer, I had about 30 minutes of training. That's no joke. With it from the guy I bought it from. He was an adaptive technology or assistive technology person. 30 minutes of training, he set it up for me, and I remember being up till 2 in the morning many nights thinking, what have I done? Because they weren't really cheap back then at all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, did I waste a ton of money, and will I ever learn WordPerfect 5.0, and can I ever master DOS 5.0?
Man, WordPerfect 5.1 was like the best word processor
and DOS
ever.
6.22.
Ever.
There you go.
It just was all downhill from there.
Indeed.
Ah, for the good old days.
Yes. And speaking of the good old days and the good old albums played during said days, we have a report from David about Pink Floyd, of all things, that we talked about last week.
Hi, this is David Dobler. I called yesterday. But anyway, I was talking about music and how it needs to be from the heart. The other thing I was going to mention is I remember when that album, The Wall, came out. And, of course, I had my tube stereo and my Thorian's turntable and all the good gear, you know. And it was amazing how well it was recorded. Vinyl still sounds a little bit better than CD if it's in really good shape. The other thing that I wanted to ask is I never hear any mention of accessible apps like Pro Tools or MainStage, which is or Logic or any of those kinds of things. Logic is not accessible yet. I wonder how we can get some of that stuff fixed with Apple. MainStage is an app for your keyboards, and you can use it for live work as well. So anyway, just wanted to find out about that and get that information to you. Anyway, have a wonderful rest of the day, and talk to you soon.
So there you go. I love the description of all of this equipment, you know, this really heavy-duty, cool stuff that people who are really into audio will get to make things sound good.
Thanks for those iReports and emails. You can always send us email, resources@saratalk.com. Leave iReports over on iBlink Radio for iPhone or Android. You can go to the website, www.sarotalk.com, and leave a comment on our blog or call us at 866-997-2522. We just may play your iReport or read your email or comment on it on this podcast. Well, it's time now for Roundabout. We have a couple stories in this Roundabout section for this week, and this first one is a friend of mine. I actually know Rory Hoffman, who is a blind musician who lives in Nashville. Just before I came to the Sarotalk podcast, you guys actually covered Rory, and I believe he had just released a new album or was getting ready to, and there was a mention of it. Yeah. So Rory is one of the most focused people I know, I think. He moved from South Dakota, went to Nashville, and just basically learned his way around down there, learned the city, got into the music business. He plays 14 different instruments, and he has a rather unconventional guitar
style. What a slacker.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Guy is absolutely phenomenal a musician. Anything he plays is just, you know, almost better than you've ever heard. And he has a rather unconventional guitar style. He lays it on his lap and plays it overhand. And if you go to the article we link to, there's actually some audio you can listen to with him playing and discussing that. And then there's also an article you can read.
But he's doing it all wrong.
Yeah, he's doing it all wrong, but he's doing something right. I've actually talked to guys that see him play. It's like, I can't copy his licks. So it's kind of fun.
That's because you're doing it wrong.
They're doing it wrong.
Yeah. No, well, wait. He's holding it wrong.
There you go.
There you go. I love it. It turns out that he developed his overhand guitar style because he wanted to play music from a very early age, apparently, but his hands were too small to make the guitar do what he wanted them, what he wanted it to do. So he developed this overhand style. Interestingly enough, there was another blind guitar player, Jeff Healy. They're not in the same musical genre, but he had a similar style, and apparently this allows a lot of interesting things that you can't do if you're playing the, quote, correct way.
One of the things that excited me about this article was apparently, because Rory does have a lot of stuff up on YouTube, so apparently Keith Urban got a hold of some of this stuff and got a hold of Brad Paisley. Both of these guys are really well-known guitarists in Nashville, phenomenal artists themselves, and they have become aware of Rory, and I think Brad Paisley's comment was holy moly, if I recall correctly.
Yes, that is right.
So, you know, Rory may be, who knows, we may see him somewhere one of these days appearing
indeed
in a town near you. So it's kind of interesting because he talked to me about the fact that he plays accordion in a jazz band. They don't know he plays guitar. He plays country band over here, country music over here with a group, plays guitar, and they don't know he plays accordion. So he's actually just doing all kinds of stuff and loving every minute of it down there. And finally, in this week's podcast, we need to pay homage to a gentleman who made all of our lives easier. He invented the wireless remote control, and Eugene Pauly has died at age 86, or 96, pardon me. Yeah, good long life.
Indeed, and he has enabled couch potatoes everywhere because the previous types of remote controls were wired, and so they were attached to the TV, and then he invented the clicker, and so you could make it go channel up or channel down, and I think you could change the volume up and down as well.
It apparently had some space age name in its original incarnation from Zenith. I forget exactly, but this one report I heard said that it looked like a ray gun.
Wow. I can remember when I was young, I lived out in the country with my folks, we had 4 TV channels, and you had to actually get up and turn the knob to change the channel. So if you wanted to watch any of those 4 channels.
If it was on UHF, you had to turn 2 knobs.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Plus good fiddle point with the antenna.
I've actually seen the radio, I don't know what it was called, Buddy, you probably or Ricky know, that actually had Braille on the dial. It actually would show you what station you were tuned to. And I think it
really?
Had TV stations. Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Yeah, no, it actually had Braille on the little. It's like you would turn the knob and the little display would scroll under your finger. So,
oh, wow. So it was refreshable. It didn't just have like frequencies around the dial that you...
Well, no, I think it was a... I mean, the thing actually turned, but there was Braille on it.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
So another interesting thing about this guy that I heard again on, it was on the same report on the talk radio channel here in Erie when the guy was talking about his death, was that he actually carried an original Zenith wireless remote control, and I forget he called they called it some. I wish I could remember what they called the thing.
I know they called the space age name. Well, they called the wired one the Lazy Bone, which is not necessarily space age. But
no, but the wireless one was like this really cool, like science fiction sounding name. But anyway, apparently he carried one with him everywhere he went until he died.
No kidding.
like kind of like an I invented this thing.
Look what I did.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Of course, you know, you got him, and then you got the guy who invented the universal off button. Remember him?
I don't know about that one. No.
Oh yeah, this guy invented this button in response to all those annoying airport waiting rooms and doctor's offices and so forth that had the TV
and you could just
on.
Turn it off.
And he invented this remote. It just had one button. It was an on off toggle, and you pushed it and it went through all of the remote control control codes for every remote control brand until it found the right one, and it would turn the TV off.
Nice.
That,
I would love to have that.
You could make some people really angry
Jerry
with
Springer
that thing.
In the doctor's waiting room.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You could probably really. Yeah. 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 Well, and then of course to bring this back to Apple, there was a section in Steve Wozniak's sort of memoir about how he would play this practical joke on people like that had to do with the poor TV reception, and you had to hold the antenna a certain way, and it wouldn't come in. And so he would screw with people and make them do all these crazy things to make the TV channel stay in. Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
Anyway, the book is called I Was.
I Was.
Aha.
I Was. He talks about that among other practical jokes.
More reading. If you run out of stuff to read, go find I Was. If you finish the Steve Jobs book, then go read
right.
I Was.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you cried, and then you read I Was.
I Was is considerably shorter.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. That's good to know, actually. I may start with I Was, then. Work my way up to the Steve Jobs memoir or biography.
There you go. Nicely done.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Hope that something we have said in our musings and ramblings has caught your attention, along with the news that we covered. Remember, you can go to our show page, sarotalk.com. Check out those links. Read those articles for yourself. We've given you some things to think about, maybe do a little more research on. We've already given you our comment information several times, and Patrick's going to give it to you again at the end of the show. So trust that you all had a good Memorial Weekend at the time that you're listening to this. It should already be over with. But until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Sarotalk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll